listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to LA Talk Radio today, Your Ultimate Life. Today, we're going to do something really fun. We're going to do something we haven't done for a while. Got a special guest who is my business partner and magic owner of Red Aussie Publish and Joy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm
very often, but when I do, trouble happens. Well, yeah. We were supposed to be on yesterday, right? But we had some kind of something going on, and so we're back today.
Here we are. So
double
one of the
trouble.
Things that I just want to unleash you here for a minute, telling your story, like getting your story out into the world. People don't realize how much power there is in story. And you have become, over the last 10 years, a powerhouse mid-tier publisher with, after this year, you'll probably have somewhere between 40 and 50 books in your catalog already.
Lots
and lots. So tell me what drew you to publishing and why it is so, number one, much fun for you, and what it means to help people get their stories published.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I'm going to start just going back in time. So you had a book that you wrote, Tightrope of Depression, kind of your, you didn't know it at the time, like a part one of a memoir, let's say. And then you had a New York publisher who published the book, thought it was awesome, did all that stuff. You know, and this was still back in the day when, oh my gosh, if you did anything on your own, nobody took you seriously because it was seen as quite taboo to really go out on your own and self-publish. It's still, I mean, and we're going back, whatever, 15 years or 10 years at least, 11 years. But at that point, you know, a New York publisher, I think that the impression out there is that they do everything. And they don't. they do stuff, but compared to what a publisher like myself or other people do is, you know, considerably more. And a lot of that has to do with technology and different players coming on board that just we didn't see years ago. So, for example, you know, a distribution center like popular in the United States, Ingram Spark. However, there's other distribution places that are far more flexible and have a wider distribution net, such as Draft to Digital, or the letter D to D. But starting off, I guess, I saw some gaps in the system. And I joined a group of other authors and publishers who also felt the same. We felt that we had to do a lot of the work that we assumed a traditional publisher would do, like marketing. Traditional publishers do not market your book. Now, if you're, you know, Harry Potter author, or you're a really, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, if you're a really big name, yeah, they will. But you're getting, you know, this is a $1 million book. Most people's books aren't like that. So even though, even if you have a New York publisher, you have to do your own marketing. And that was one thing I was a little bit surprised. Well, I wasn't a little bit surprised. I was shocked at that. So when I started to investigate, okay, well, what if, how do you do some of these things that, I mean, surely there's marketing out there. How do you do it? So a lot of it was, all of it was self-taught. And then you get experience and you think, okay, I won't do that again. I'll try something different. But and then being with a group of other authors and publishers, we all started to, you know, look at different things and really support each other, like truly support each other by buying each other's books. So that was one thing. And, you know, that journey started out of a need because I saw a gap and I thought, well, I think I could do just as good or even a better job. And of course, with freelancers all over the world, you have the flexibility of hiring whoever you want to do a cover or a page layout or whatever it is that you want to get done. And even, you know, some graphics for your social media campaign, all those kinds of things. So that's where it started. And I have to say that, you know, there's been some a lot really good highs, but then there's been some really epic lows of very demanding clients and outrageous asks and expectations, you know, not some client getting furious at me because I didn't answer my phone at 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, try to, you know, and I think also at that time, you know, when you are a small publisher and you're growing, because you're not a New York publisher, there may be a little bit of, you know, how people perceive you. So, you know, with the group I'm in and other people, we, you know, we position ourselves as people, we know what we're doing. I consider myself an expert in this field. I mean, I'm not, you know, all knowing and all being, but I've done enough books and I've been around. And the other thing I think, which is really what I find fun, is all the new software, the technology that's coming out specifically for publishers, not necessarily authors, but publishers, that really give us an opportunity to chip away at those big publisher houses in New York. So that's kind of a...
Well, that's fabulous. So I can, you know, as a long-time client of yours, mm-hmm. I can vouch for when Joyce says, I can do better than that. Everybody needs to watch out because she does better research and dives in better than anybody I ever heard of.
Well, so I am like a dog with a bone in that respect because I have to figure it out. It's like I know there's a way. So I know I'm interrupting you, Callum, but you know, so I was at a publishers conference in London, England, in that Self-Publishers Live. That's James Blatch. He runs that. He's an amazing guy. He does fiction. I think he was in the UK. I don't know what they're called over there. Like whatever the equivalent of the Air Force or something. So his books, fiction, are historical fiction, respecting to do with airplanes and that. But at this publishers conference, some of the things that came out and came up that are like super brand new. What's funny is that this was a sold out conference in the United Kingdom, right in the heart of London. And the majority of the distributors, the vendors, the people with the different software, they're all from the from the United States, or 99.9% of them, which I thought was kind of funny. And the largest of this conference in the world is by Author Nation. That's coming up in November in where else? Las Vegas. You know, so there's opportunities like that, especially with the new programs, the new software, the new technology. It becomes really exciting because you get to try things that are not mainstream. The New York publishers are not doing this. And maybe they will at some point, but of course they're going to have to charge their clients a lot more money. And I think what we find fun as, you know, mid-tier publishers is to experiment. And I say, hey, you know, I'm going to pass this on to my client. I think they could take advantage of it because it helps me and it helps them. Like some of the things that some of the new features in a program like Vellum that I'm going to do your book and I'm offering it to my clients as well. I mean, if it's going to elevate their book and how it's perceived and how it's received, then it's a win-win for all of us, and especially the reader.
So one of the things that I want you to highlight is,
yeah,
one of the main things that you didn't like that our New York publisher did, and I know the owner and I love him and he's a good guy, so there's no issue there.
No.
But that just wasn't in the model is they didn't run a bestseller campaign on Amazon to get you a bestseller badge or get you elevated. And so one of the groups you joined, you know, you had to do the research and learn how to do that. And people act like it's a trivial thing to get an Amazon bestseller, but it's not.
No, it isn't.
And you learned how to do that. Yeah. And what I know about you is for all of your clients, you have the astounding record of a 100% track record of not just getting top 10, but getting number one bestsellers. Yeah. When they follow your instructions and do what they tell you to do. You have a 100% track record.
Yeah.
So tell me more about that.
Well, there's a little bit of, I think it's, so for like AI, I use AI a lot, like all day, every day to do whatever it is. And one of the things that I've gotten to doing, and it's out there now too, is medical stuff. So if I'm thinking, what are these symptoms? You know, you used to put in Google, now you put it in AI and it spits out a whole bunch of stuff. Some things you think, others you're like, uh-oh. But I, and that goes on to publishing. So I'll have clients who'll say, what about this? What about this? What about this? You know, they want to be different and innovative. And but publishing and books is still a traditional environment. And, you know, you don't want to stray too far away from a norm of people's expectations. I mean, I think we've witnessed this with, dare I say, Cracker Barrel. I've never been to a Cracker Barrel, but I'm assuming by their logo and what their store looks like. I didn't actually know it was a store and a restaurant. Huh. A country store, I guess. You know, is that you don't want to stay too far because you're going to, you know, piss off a lot of your clients. You're going to piss off your base and your demographic. So same thing with same thing with publishing, you know, and a bestseller campaign. You know, there are things to do. There's a lot of research. It's numbers. It's a numbers game. So when people say, oh, I got to, you know, whatever it is now, I don't think there's a New York Times bestseller anymore. One of your guests one time, Wall Street Journal.
I think they tripped that Wall Street Journal. One,
yeah. And I think it's now New York Times bestseller still. But the thing with those, okay, people say, oh, I'd love to have a New York Times bestselling book. You sure? Of course you would. Yeah, you just go ahead and buy, you know, 20,000 or whatever copies of your own book. And hopefully you have a large enough garage to store 20,000 books or whatever the number is. It's a big number. And you buy it from the publisher. And it's not like buying author copies on Amazon for $4 or $5. You're paying a lot more. You're paying not market price, but you're paying a few dollars below that. So it's very expensive to get a New York Times best-selling book. And in some ways, it's a little fake because I can, you know, you buy 20,000, 50,000, whatever copies that you need.
It's 5,000. Somebody that I know did it. And he had to spend $30,000, he told me.
There you go.
Flat, he had to spend $30,000 to get it, so we don't have to even do hypothetical.
Okay,
$30,000.
Well, my number's a little high. I didn't think I was exaggerating, but okay. So $30,000. Now, you know, Amazon, I don't read the New York Times. Maybe people do. I suppose they do. I don't know what their list is like. But, you know, I don't read it. But almost everybody on the planet somewhere along the line goes to Amazon, and that really is the largest marketplace to sell your book. Like them, don't like them, it's like eBay. You love them, you hate them, whatever it is, that's the largest marketplace. So, you know, you'd got to do the research to figure out how to get the bestseller, and that's what I do, because it is quite laborious to figure out the categories and calculations. And, you know, there is a formula that us in the publishing world uses to get that. And it is a lot of work, especially when you're coming up to the launch day. But, you know, one of the things that happens with some people, they, you know, then clients will say, what about this? And why not try that? That's in a traditional field of publishing. There are still some do's and don'ts, and we don't like to stray too far away from the homestead. You know, there's certain fonts that readers expect to see when they open up a book. That's not the time to get fancy or creative or be independent. You can do that on the cover, but inside, readers expect, to have a certain look and feel for the most part. For example, when you pick up any magazine or any newspaper on the planet, it's in Times New Roman, Adobe Garamond. It's always in that type of font. They've been doing it for years and years and years. And even in an interior book, we still kind of stick to those types of norms. And
I'm going to add something here.
Yeah,
you were back on the bestseller thing. You made the point, and it's fair, that you can spend a bunch of money and buy copies to get on one of the publishing bestsellers, like USA Today and New York Times. You can do that. You cannot do that on Amazon.
You cannot. No.
And that's the interesting thing.
The
difference. You can't just go buy a bunch of your own books and get there.
No.
Because
you cannot.
Amazon checks the purchasers, which makes your accomplishment that much more interesting, because you can't just go buy copies and then you're done. You can't do that.
No. And, you know, Amazon, you know, they're looking to protect, obviously, their own business, their name, their reputation, and, you know, for the buying experience. And so if you buy one book, That's one book. I can't then go ahead and, you know, do and buy a book in your, you can't do that. I'm going to buy five books. It counts as five. No, it doesn't. It counts as one purchase. So you know, it's very specific. One account, one purchase. That's what Amazon looks at for sales. And that also affects, you know, the rankings and how your book is ranked. So there's a lot of things that people think they can do on their own. And sure, I mean, you can figure stuff out. But if you want to go wider distribution than Amazon, many places won't let you in the door still. You know, they still see you as a person who self-publishes and maybe they've got one book. They likely don't want to take a chance on that author because they don't know if they're going to be around next week, next year. You know, they're going to buy a bunch of books and then what? You know, so they're more reluctant to, you know, give a person an opportunity like a bookstore or a library. It's still, you do need to have a publisher imprint behind you to be taken seriously as an author.
Fabulous. So that's really good. I want you to get into the creative things because working with you as my publisher, I mean, yes, you know, I'm Flukiger, you're Flukiger, you're my business partner, but I'm talking to you now as my publisher. You've introduced me in the process of both publishing and in the process of, is there a TV? Can you close that door? There's a TV going on in the background that I can hear. Can you reach over and close that door? Thank you. So there's a... Thank you. I appreciate that.
Is it okay now?
Yeah. It was just, you know, very, very noticeable, and I just realized
it was
in the background.
Competing with the news channel.
Yeah, I don't want to compete with the news channel.
Or whatever.
Whatever. So thank you. So... You have introduced me as an author to a bunch of innovations that I didn't know about because of your marketing. And so you've talked about publishing and how valuable it is to have an imprint publishing house behind you. Mm-hmm. What I also know about you from being your client and that you offer other clients is your marketing chops in terms of news releases, in terms of getting a media bar, in terms of helping people get their book up, you know, noticed in the algorithm, you know, all kinds of things that help with initial sales. Obviously, it helps with bestseller stuff too, but it also helps with, you know, follow-on things, product creation and whatever you're going to do with the book afterwards. Yeah. So talk about some of the creative things that you've learned, maybe from the groups you've been in or on your own research that I've been the beneficiary of and that you offer to clients that is way different than a New York house or a publisher mid-tier with less experience than you have.
Well, one of the things, and I think, I mean, a New York publisher does this as well, is, you know, as an author, you have to have a media kit. Usually that's a paper copy. But today, of course, we're doing media kits online. So yours, for example, is KellenFlukigerMedia.com.
Yeah, that's right here.
Yeah, and you can go there and you can see the books that you have and the podcast appearances and the radio show and the TV things that you've done because you have a TV show on online and network TV in Florida. So something like that is probably newer in the realm of not just publishing but marketing. A lot of people don't have an online marketing, like a specific dedicated URL that you can tell people, okay, you want to know more about me? Okay, go to my media page. Now, if you're attracting, I don't know, for pitches or for podcasts or TV shows or radio, sending out something like that is really good because people's attention span is kind of short and you don't want to send them big, thick pages of whatever it is and, you know, to set yourself apart, that's one thing. I'd still have a paper media page at the bottom of one of your websites just to say, you know, if people want to download a copy. Sometimes you want to, if you're traveling or maybe you want to look at something a little bit closer, you just, you know, you can download it. The other, some things that are different are having book trailers. So an actual video just like a movie trailer. There's lots of software packages out there now that you can create a book trailer. And that's something that I haven't done yet, but I will. It just seems like it's a fun thing to try and do. The other thing, what nobody really tells you as well, is to have, as best as you can, try to get the name of your book as a URL. For some books, it's a little hard. And like you, you have, you know, 20 plus books. That's a lot of URLs to manage. And I don't know that it's, for something like you who has a library of books, that would make sense to have, you know, a dedicated page for each book. However, in that case, what you can do is you can have a Facebook page devoted strictly to your book. So you have one, you know, Kellen's Books, I think I called it. And you know, so a person can go and see all the stuff you're doing with your specific books. Some other things that are kind of fun that people are doing now is they're drifting away. I mentioned draft to digital earlier. They're drifting away from only having the book on Amazon, only having the book on another place for distribution. Ingram Spark is draft to digital. They offer distribution well beyond just the, if you're on Amazon. So libraries and all those other places, if you upload your book to them, to their site, they have a distribution system that's far and wide. So that's kind of a cool thing. And they're not too well known either. There's, and of course, now with podcasts, you know, our, you know, this radio show here or your podcast, you're in the top 3% now worldwide out of all the podcasts out there, which is a pretty darn good achievement. And it takes hard work to get to that point too. But, you know, get, what about, you know, there's specific authors or specific podcast hosts who will only interview authors. They'll only talk about books. And that's a fun way to reach an audience that you wouldn't have otherwise reached. A lot of people like to do ads. They think that, you know, still kind of in the old way, I guess, that ads are the way to go. Maybe, but look outside of the traditional Facebook or LinkedIn, which is really ads are very expensive on there. Look to something like TikTok, where you can create a fun video using your book, using, or if you don't have your cover yet, but you can create some fun TikTok videos that are specific. We call it book talk. TikTok, we call it book talk. That's a thing. It's a like a sub genre of TikTok called book talk. And the key to being successful on book talk is for your account, you only talk about books. You don't click on, as much as you want to, those videos showing, you know, cats doing stupid things. I mean, I happen to love those myself because I'm a cat fanatic. And so I love my cats. And, you know, I like seeing that. However, don't do it on your account where you want to be advertising or highlighting your book. That TikTok account is only for books. That is one fatal flaw that a lot of people make. And I've done this too. I've gone to other places and, you know, you go down a rabbit trail or a rabbit hole of different videos that pop up. You have to resist the urge to do that. One way is, it's just like with any kind of addiction. You have to just sometimes just quit cold turkey. Don't look at anything for 2 to 3 weeks. Allow TikTok to say, okay, they're taking a break. And then when you do go back into your account, only do stuff with books. That's all. So that's,
Do you have a separate account to do that?
You can, yeah. So yes, absolutely. So you can have your own account that you do all the other stuff with, and then you have another account that's under your name. Maybe you use an initial instead, but yes, only for the books. Yes, so you do have to have more than one account.
Why does that? How does that help you? Tell me more about that, or tell the audience more about why that is cool.
Well, because, you know, you'll start to attract people who are specifically looking for books. And so then your material will start to be pushed out to more people who are looking for books. Because otherwise, right now, it's like books, it's cats, it's travel, it's the news, it's whatever it is. And then TikTok gets confused. They're like, okay, so now she's got this book, but I don't know what to do with it. Like, where am I going to send this video? Who is interested in seeing this? But if you've only been looking at stuff related to authors or other people's books or anything to do with publishing, then the algorithm says, ah, okay, this person's an author, right? I'm not going to send them. I'm not going to show them anything to do with cats or cooking or something. I'm only going to show them stuff with books. So then you start to train the algorithm. You start to train TikTok to only show you things related to books. That's how you can get a lot of viewers and a lot of subscribers, because book talk is big on TikTok. It's a big genre. So if you want to stay in that, you have to keep your account clean.
So that's something you told me after you went to that publishers conference in London a month or so ago, learning about this book talk, and we're going to start doing that, or are already doing it, with a separate account. Exactly. What else did you pick up at this indie publishers conference, which you told me later was the largest indie publishers conference in the
Europe.
World?
Yeah, well,
in Europe. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of in. Yeah, the largest one in the world is the one in Author Nation, but this is like the largest one outside of Las Vegas.
Okay.
Things such as on the side of the book, if I can show a book here, this is one of your books. You know, you see the spine here, like the inside. Like you got the outside here. Okay, great. But on here, what you can do in a program, this is in a program called Vellum, you can spray the edges. So I can have an image on this spine here. And then when you kind of flip fan the book, that, you know, the image will, just like those old things when you used to make when you were kids and you flip the book and, you know, the picture would show on the side. But what that's called spraying. And what's cool about that is that, A, not a lot of people are doing it. That's a really, really new feature in Vellum. And I saw that featured on books in London. I thought, oh my gosh, that is the coolest thing. So what if you have, I don't know, whatever kind of book it is, and you have, let's say, so this one on your cover, for example, you have, you know, a guy, you know, walking a tightrope. You could have that, a small figure or some type of symbol or image on the side there, and it fans through. It's just a little bit of a visual detail that doesn't take any more time to create or to have on your book, because it'll be printed. It's part of the book. And the other cool thing is you can take that same image and it can be in the background. So it's not like you don't have any pictures in this book, but if you have a picture with a if you have a book with a picture in it, it's an image that goes on top, and then the words go around it or above it or below it. This is like you took a piece of printed paper and the image is in the background. Now, how cool would that be? You open your book and it becomes interesting and fun to read, maybe depending on the subject matter, but it's just something that goes, oh, this is cool. It just comes across as more professional and a more elevated, and something that people haven't seen, but in a good way. And I think you're going to start seeing more and more of this in books. And there are publishers out there who will charge you quite a bit more to do that. But there are programs, like I said, Vellum is sort of the gold standard for layout and design for books that will have this in the background. So it's just like taking one of your favorite pieces of printed paper and it being in the background. So the text
like
goes on top.
Transparency.
It really is.
Barely visible.
Yeah. And to do that in a traditional layout and design, it doesn't translate. You know, it's an image. But you can have it go across two pages. It's just the coolest thing ever. I saw that. I thought, I have to do that. So I'm going to do that with your new book coming out.
I'm excited
because and the Rise of AI.
Yeah, Coaching and the Rise of AI is going to set the coaching industry on its ear and piss a lot of people off. That's okay.
Well, you've already pissed a lot of people off with some of the posts that you've created. It's like, how dare, almost like pitchforks in there with the gates. It's like, that stuff. Yeah, people got pretty pissed when you posted something like that. It's like, good, we have to keep it up. More of that.
More to
Well,
come.
You know, and you think, you know, with such a strong, like a strong reaction, just like with Cracker Barrel, you know, people take notice when there's such a strong reaction.
So when you get into publishing, I'd like to talk for a minute about some of the myths or mistakes people make that you find difficult. Because one of the things I'm doing, and you know this, right down here on the bottom there, I've got this dream, build, write it. And that's a challenge that we're holding here at the end of the month, September 29th. Yeah, a month from now, through October 3rd, and it's to help people identify their own personal stories and then turn them into books and products and services so they can make a difference and make some money.
Yeah.
And so we have right now a group of authors that started with us in February that's going to add to your catalog, and another group started in June. And so we'll have another group starting at in October. But as you do these, I hear you talk a lot about assumptions people make or mistakes people make, and they think, well, this is not a big deal. And so talk a little bit about how to work with a publisher and how to do it well, because of some of the things you've seen and maybe mistakes, if you call them mistakes, but stuff that you see. Talk about that.
One of the biggest things I'll talk about, it's the cover and it's the interior. You know, the cover, I ask people to come with a concept. What do you like? What you don't like? What colors do you see? Like, what is your vision? Because it is their book. So it has to be whatever you're designing, whether it's a book or whether it's a piece of clothing or whatever it is, you have to have your own self in it. And a designer, a layout person, a publisher, they bring that vision to fruition. Now, as a person who is the publisher, though, you know, there's a lot of do's and don'ts. And one of the biggest things, let's talk about the cover for a few minutes, because that's a pretty big one. Many people come with a concept and you think, okay, that's great. And you're thinking, okay, but they're thinking of things that they like. So I had a client, she's a businesswoman. She likes certain flowers. And her social media person talked her into that. That's a good idea. That's a great thing to put on the cover of a book. And it's like, okay, but it's a business book. This is, again, where you don't want to mess with the reader or turn people off. When I pick up when I'm looking at a bookshelf, I'm scrolling down on Amazon or you're in a bookstore, you're scanning and you make decisions, not even probably a second, fraction of a second. You're making a decision as to whether or not that book looks interesting to you. Now, if I'm looking at, I'm in the business section and I see a book that has a single flower on it, kind of drab, that's not going to say to me that is the leadership book that I was looking for. People are going to pass it by. It's not something that you expect for a business book. That doesn't mean to say that you have to follow a formula, there's a formula and then there's a formula. There's sort of an unwritten kind of formula, but that doesn't scream business. So you're going to alienate probably most of your demographic, if not all of them, because they're not going to assume that that's a business book. And even though you think, oh, what's the big deal? You know, don't judge a book by your cover, but you have to judge a book by the cover initially to know if you want to even look further. We are judging a book by its cover. Excuse me. So even though you may like something, you like this color, you like that color, what a publisher does is they look at it from a marketing perspective. They look at it from a, you know, how would this book be positioned in the marketplace, regardless of what you like? You know, maybe for your, you know, author picture, have that pink or put a flower on it or whatever it is. But, you know, there are certain expectations, again, that words come up a few times already, that people have when they're looking in a business book. And you want to be taken seriously and not look like you did it, you know, on, well, I love Canva. Canva in 5 minutes. Just like Cracker Barrel did with their new logo. It looks like, gosh, could have done that. You know, somebody's kid could have done that in 5 minutes just with a little tablet. So you don't want it to look like that because people aren't going to take it seriously. So that's one mistake. You have to look at it from a marketer's eye. That's why myself and other publishers ask an author to go to Amazon. That's the largest marketplace. That's where I use Amazon. Scroll down. Look for books that are in your genre. So if you're a leadership book and it's for women and it's for go look at those books and look at books that have been published in the last couple of years and look at what are their titles like? What are their covers like? And are you attracted to it? You know, because subconsciously we make these decisions and we'll scroll by something because, you know, the idea is to stop the scroll, not with something stupid, not with something offensive, not with something that just doesn't work, but something that captures your attention in a good way and forces you to stop. So that's one thing, is the cover. The other thing is the interior of the book. Usually there's not too many problems with that, but again, you know, some people want, you know, they want to try it whole, have a whole bunch of different fonts, or, you know, and that doesn't work because it confuses the reader. It really pisses them off when they're opening something, and you have to make it easy to read. That's why in newspapers, as I said earlier, newspapers, magazines, we use a certain font. We use typically an Adobe Garamond or Times New Roman that you used to see in magazines. And can you hear our dog?
Oh, yes, but go ahead. It's all good.
Yeah, he does that all the time, right? And, you know, so you expect something. And the thing why we use those fonts is because they're easy on the eyes. Now, a lot of people, they don't read word for word, especially speed readers. Speed readers skim. I mean, you do that, Kellen. You kind of do your version of speed reading. And what you look for in speed reading is differences in the shape of the letters. So your eye is trained to look at the, or, like, you know, you kind of look at it and you don't really read those words. But if they're in like a weird font, especially a sans serif font, the letters look too similar to each other because they don't have that serif or that little doodad on the end, that curvy stuff. When they don't have that, you have to slow right down and read it, and that can really irritate a reader. And an irritated reader and a pissed off reader is a reader who's going to put down your book or send it to the Goodwill or whatever it is. They're not going to read your book. And then you're not going to get the benefit, A, of the money you spent publishing it, and B, whatever it is your call to action is when the person closes the book. Like, what do you want them to do on the last page of your book before they close the cover? Most authors have "do this." You're not going to get that if you stray too far and try to be too creative. Save the creativity for your social post. Save the creativity for a template, you know, for your posts as well. Save it for a banner announcing your book. Save it for your party, for goodness sakes. But don't do it in the book.
So I'm hearing two really important things. Yeah. And then a third one that you talked about a little bit ago. One is to pay the, it's not a vanity project. So if you're publishing the book as a vanity project, you want to look a certain way, it's not being published as a business element. If right. you're publishing your book for a business thing, it has to make sense in the genre. Yeah. And I don't mean same as anybody's, but it has to be, it has to belong there so that it feels like it matters. And then inside, the goal you're telling me is to make it easy on the reader, because a fatigued reader, or what you said earlier today when we were talking visual noise, if you're making it hard, you just get visual noise, and it's like having static in the background or something. It's fatiguing.
Yeah. It's irritating too. Yeah. And you're not going to want to continue. That's why in some ways, see, I like e-readers. I like e-books. You like physical books. I like e-books because I'll read, you know, in the bathtub or at night or on an airplane or something. So I like having that flexibility, depending on the light, depending on where I am, to control the size of the font, the paper, whether I want light background, dark background. So I like that. And when I, and with ebooks, you get a choice of a combination of serif and sans serif font. You can increase the size, so you can adjust it to what you like. In a physical book, of course, you can't do that. You get what you get. And depending on your demographic, you may want to increase the size a little bit, because I wear readers, but, you know, one of your books, the font is, you can't really see it, but it's pretty small. I don't think it's 12. I think it's an 11.5 or something. So sometimes, you know, depending on who your demographic is, you might want to go up a size for just to make it not, I don't mean large print book, but I mean, you know, you just want to increase the size of the font slightly to make it easier on the person who you're trying to sell the book to.
So I'd like to change directions here for a minute. Yes. And I want to go to what's on the horizon. Mm, you talked about Yeah, you talked about Vellum and the new program that lets you do fancy things like on the spine of the outside spine. And as you look forward to the publication of the one I've got, we've got 9 more coming from the groups that are running right now. We expect to get 15 or 20 from the challenge. Dream Build Ride .com will get another 15 or 20 that we'll be publishing first part of next year. Mm-hmm. When you think about what you saw in London and what you're expecting at Author Nation in Vegas when you go in November, what's on the horizon that's exciting for authors? Because sometimes people get the feeling, well, you know, does it really matter? And my experience as a coach and an author and someone who loves helping people craft and share their stories is that the most, and I'm speaking to each one of you listeners, the most important thing you have to give to the world is the truth of your own story. Like, you can write and teach about something over there, but if you're a change maker, if you're a movement maker, if you're somebody that really wants to do something, the most gold you have in your hand, and I mean the most money and the most impact, is the truth of your own story. So right. When you think about getting people to get their voices out and so forth, you mentioned book trailers earlier. What's on the horizon that you see that excites you about publishing to stay as enthusiastic as you are now? Because it's clear from talking that it's fun and you really like it. So what's coming up that people should look forward to?
But I think what's coming up is more visual. So the book trailer idea, videos about, that's why Book Talk is so cool, is because you can talk about your book in a video and you can create the kind of kooky videos that people create, but specific to your book. And that makes it more in tune or in step with what we're seeing on social media. There's some really clever videos that I've seen from authors when I was in London that just really, you know, pull people in to wonder more about what their book is all about. And I think you don't really see that across social media right now. Like, there's too much stuff about maybe the news or this or that. But when you get really into the specific genre of book talk on something like TikTok, your world opens up, and there are opportunities for then going on podcasts, going on, getting your book in special places other than bookstores. Bookstores are hard to get. Well, they're hard and they're not hard. A, you need to be in having a somewhat established publisher to help you do that. But the other thing is that how many people go to physical bookstores anymore? Like, I go there because I want to buy a certain something special something. But if I can't buy it on Amazon, or maybe they don't have it, if they don't have it on Amazon, I think, oh, okay, I have to go to the bookstore. But, you know, but a different place, like a library, a hospital, getting your book even into museums, the museum bookstores, or what about airport bookstores? Airport bookstores are completely separate from a traditional Barnes & Nobles, or I don't know what they have in Canada, something else. Indigo, I think it's called. So there's different, that is different. So an airport, that's a huge market if you could to get your book into an airport bookstore, because who doesn't, it's late, okay, I read something on the airplane, and people will spend full dollars for a book in an airport bookstore. So things like that, like the non-traditional places now are becoming a lot more traditional, or they're becoming a lot more common, I think is what it is. So I think that's really exciting, just the visual stuff, and people are getting very creative in what they want to do with their book. A lot of people that I talk to, especially in when I was in England, now a lot of the authors there, they were fiction writers. A lot of them were fiction writers. And what they want to do is they want to make a living writing. Like, that's what they want to do. They want to sit, go somewhere, do research on their book, and they want to be an author. And so for those people, you know, you have to be a little bit creative in your exposure. And social media is still free. That really is the biggest place and probably still untapped marketplace to get your stuff seen. But to do that, you have to be consistent, and you have to, if not daily, at least every other day, you have to put material out there, content out there. You can do, you know, a lot of book cover reveals. Maybe you do have a party. If you're in, you know, in some town in England, you have a local pub thing. You really have to put yourself out there. You can't really just, if you want to make money and you want to do this for a living, you do have to put yourself out there, and you do have to go out of your comfort zone. And you can start small, and, you know, just, you got to push forward. Like, some people complain, well, they don't have sales. And that's where, again, social media, it's free.
TikTok. You blew me away with something you told me, and that was a particular social media. When people say social, they think of Facebook, they think of LinkedIn, they think of TikTok, Twitter, yeah. X, whatever.
Pinterest.
And yeah, that's what I want you to talk about. Pinterest. We haven't even mentioned that.
Yeah.
It blew me away when you said how successful. So talk a little bit about Pinterest and why that works. What is that about that that's good for books specifically?
Well, you know, Pinterest, again, is visual. And you can also now have video on Pinterest. You couldn't do that before, but now you can. So using Pinterest as a marketing tool, it's cheaper than a lot of the other platforms. So if you want to do an ad on Facebook, or if you want to do an ad on Instagram, or boost a post, you have to pay to play. And I'm not saying don't pay to play. I pay to play on these platforms too. You can do a boost for $5 or $1 a day. Don't do something stupid like $20 a day or more. Start small, $1 a day. Because you start to get into a rhythm, and you get to analyze then, is somebody actually looking at this, or am I just, you know, but for $1 a day for 7 days, you really cannot go wrong. But on something like Pinterest, because it is so visual, you can put, you know, you can have your own board, favorite books, or, you know, then you can my books, you can have those, and people will look, you know, it's a big audience out there on Pinterest who are looking for pretty book covers, or they're looking for something else to read, or, you know, so they're always searching for stuff. And with Pinterest, the key to being successful on Pinterest is it's not just one dimensional. So it's not like you create an author page, you use yourself. So it's no secret, I like cats, I like cooking, I like fashion, I like skincare, I love to travel. So I like books. And as a publisher, it's like, this is all kind of related. So when you have your name on, you have to create a banner that lets people know that you're an author. I'm not clairvoyant, I'm not going to know this. So have a professional looking Pinterest profile with a banner that either highlights a coming book, or that lets people know that you're an author, you're a publisher, that you're into that type of space. And yes, you can pin stuff about cats and cooking and favorite cookbooks. I mean, if you want to, but you have to start. You have to start somewhere. Then you can start to introduce things about your book and what kind of books you like, and maybe a gap in a genre that you're writing in. Look for other authors to collaborate with and saying, hey, you know, I'll promote your book. Would you like to promote my book? Maybe we could work together. And going to some of these conferences as well is really invaluable, because you meet people. I met people from all over the world. You know, a guy from Australia and his daughter lives in London, and just a lot of people from the United States, a lot of people from Canada, like all over the world. They were there. Germany, there's a big, many sessions devoted to the German market. I guess it's a large emerging market. So I'm going to just say one other thing here about some of these things. You also would like to get your book translated into a second language or third language. If you know a second and third language, fantastic. But, you know, and especially maybe something like a large population language like Spanish maybe, or if you know French, something big. And that opens up another completely different world of an audience for you that may really soak up your material. I met one lady. She was a romance writer, and her books, don't ask me why, really big. She's from the United Kingdom. She's from London, really big in Italy. So she thought, That's interesting. I don't know why. Suddenly she saw a spike of buyers from Italy. So she took the time to translate her book into Italian. That's the only language that she translated into. But now she's got, you know, getting a lot of her sales now. She's getting more sales in Italy than she is in the United Kingdom and or in the United States or anywhere else. So you can take a look and see where are your buyers? Maybe they're in India. Maybe, I don't know where. But to get your book translated, and that probably will cost some money because unless you know the language, it'll be difficult. But that certainly would be worth your time at some point. But you got to get some money first to be able to get someone to translate that, or maybe you have a friend who maybe you could switch. I don't
All
know.
Right. You know. So this is fabulous. This has been wonderful, and I'm really excited. We're done. We're about out of time. So I want to ask you, you do great, and this is fantastic. A lot of really good stuff. Where can people find out more? Where should they go to find out more about you, about your publishing, about what you offer, and more of this good stuff you've been giving us? Where should they go?
That's a good question. So, you know, for almost all of the years now, I have been word of mouth. And now, because I'm having so many clients, I've decided that I'm going to start, I've created a website. It's not ready to go yet. So that is redaussiepublishing.com. And it's Red Aussie because we have a Red Australian Shepherd. Now, if you don't want to...
redaussiepublishing.com.
Right. And it's not ready to go yet, but you can still reach out to me at redaussiepublishing@gmail.com right now.
RedAussiePublishing@gmail.com.
AUSSIE.
Red Aussie Publishing.
Aussie. Yeah, all right. It says Red Aussie Multimedia under my name. But RedAussiePublishing.com, RedAussiePublishing@gmail.com. So I'm putting the finishing touches on a website because I just get so many questions. I can't answer everybody's queries. And I'm stacking up with clients. So I really need to get something going and have a filter system that just takes that burden off. And finally I said, okay, fine, I'll have a website.
Joy, thanks for being on the show today. I really appreciate your
time,
your fun, your energy, and your passion for this stuff.
Thank you, and good luck, readers.
So I want to encourage you, take the time, tell your story, make an impact. The best gift you have to the world is the truth of your own story. Joy is the best there is, and she can help you move forward to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.